Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
To remember things, do you write them down?
That's one of the ways you can do it, sure.
Do you do it? Do you write down things so you don't forget?
Depends what it is.
Okay. Provided a CV, which is a resume?
That's correct, yes.
Resume outlines your education?
Yes, sir.
Areas of specialty?
Correct.
And then it highlights your accomplishments as far as the focus of your specialty or the focus of your profession, what you like or what you do a lot, right?
Some of it, yes, sir.
So, for example, you have a number of publications that are peer-reviewed.
Correct.
And peer review publications mean that you've written something that's been evaluated and considered by other experts in the industry and have been adopted or recognized, correct?
Well, that it's been published, yes, sir.
You have a long list of peer reviewed articles dating back to 2003. Is that correct?
Yeah, as I said yesterday, most of my peer-reviewed articles are all written when I was in graduate school, correct.
Have you had any peer-review articles since 2003?
Probably not, no.
And your peer-review articles, 2003, deal with the evaluation of selected electric-powered wheelchairs?
That was one of them, yes, sir.
The next one, intelligent walkers for the elderly?
Correct.
Comparison of fatigue life for three types of manual wheelchairs?
Yes, sir.
Evaluation of a pushroom activated power assisted wheelchair?
Correct.
Displacement between the seating surface and hybrid testing dummy during transitions with the variable configuration wheelchair?
The hybrid three, yes, sir.
Assessment of manual wheelchair ride?
Correct. I was looking at forces and accelerations on the body. Yeah.
Fatigue life of two manual wheelchair cross brace designs?
Yes, sir.
Evaluation of selected ultralight manual wheelchairs?
Yes, sir.
Augmentation of 100 key ISO wheelchair test dummy to accommodate higher mass?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so you would agree that all of your peer review articles deal with wheelchairs?
Well, wheelchairs and the kinematics and kinetics forces associated with propelling wheelchairs and injuries associated with that, yes, sir.
Do any of them deal with pedestrian collisions?
No, they don't.
You've written a book chapter?
Yes, sir.
Smart technology for aging?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And again, nothing on pedestrian accidents?
That's correct.
Expanded abstracts, you've written a few?
I have, yes, sir.
Suffice to say, dealing with wheelchairs?
And assistive technology, that's correct, yes, sir.
Any have to do with pedestrian collisions?
I don't believe so, no.
Looking at your CV, you can note any area of specialty you'd like, correct?
You can put down whatever you like, I suppose. Sure.
Sure. Have you listed any specialty as pedestrian collisions?
Well, not specifically. That actually falls under impact biomechanics, biomechanical injury causation. So I didn't list it specifically, but it certainly falls under the actual expertise that I perform.
Now, doctor, when you worked with Dr. Wolf, did you have a chance to look at his report?
I did, yes.
If you saw anything in the report that was off or mistaken, would you have an opportunity to discuss that with him?
I'm sure I would, yes, sir.
Did you find anything about his report that was wrong as far as data?
I don't recall. If I did, I probably would have talked to him, but I don't recall.
You and Dr. Wolf were collaborating together, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
And when you collaborate, you relied on each other's data at times, didn't you?
To some extent, yes.
Some things Dr. Wolf did, you relied on ultimately for your interpretation and your conclusions.
I did, yes.
Did you write a report and talked about the acceleration of the ATD, the test dummies, regarding its hands and arms?
I did, yes.
When you wrote your report talking about this very specific data, do you remember what you determined was the acceleration for the ADT right hand at 29 miles per hour? How many G's that was?
Let's see. Accelerations for the right hand.
Page 6.
Yeah, it looks like 863
Gs. And when you were comparing data with Dr. Wolf, if something was different or off, would you correct it?
I'd talk to him about it, sure.
Okay. Did you ever talk to him about his collection of data regarding peak acceleration that the arm and hand experienced at a 29 mile per hour collision?
Well, when I think that 863 is from a 1,000, the CFC 1,000 hertz low pass filter. And in his report, he used a lower number from a 180 hertz. So they're both accurate numbers. It's just how you actually filter the data.
So you know what I'm talking about, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
And I ended up using a lower number than when I did my calculations.
Could we have Exhibit 1, please? You've talked a lot about this photograph. Do you see it?
I do, sir, yes.
And you described, well, you didn't describe, you read that these were superficial abrasions, correct?
That's the diagnosis, yes, sir.
Any of those wounds a puncture in your mind?
I don't make medical diagnoses, so I'm not going to comment on that, sir.
Well, you talked about x-rays and injury. I know you don't make medical diagnoses, but you were very careful to be detailed about what this was. Not a laceration, right? It is a superficial abrasion.
That was what was diagnosed by the medical records, yes, sir.
And you were very careful to make that distinction when you were critiquing Dr. Welch's work.
Objection. Sustained interval.
And so you also looked at x-rays, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
And when you looked at them, did you try to give the impression that you've read them, even though you're not a doctor and you can interpret them?
Objection. Sustained.
Were you trying to interpret them for us?
No, it was actually interpreted by the medical examiner that there were no acute injuries.
So when you were giving all that information to the jury about the x-rays, was that your personal opinion or were you just regurgitating something you had read?
That was the medical examiner's opinion, but certainly you can look at the x-rays and see that there are no actual fracture lines or space displacement between the joints. So but it's the medical examiner and his diagnoses that I rely upon.
So when you were going through an explanation of all these different photographs and x-rays, you weren't trying to portray that you were giving your own personal opinion about it?
I don't give diagnoses, but if there's no fractures on an x-ray as diagnosed by an MD or physician, you can look at the x-ray and then you can see why there are no fractures. You can look at the x-ray and see where the fractures are if there's a diagnosis. So the diagnosis was no fracture, no acute injury, and that's certainly consistent with looking at the x-ray itself.
So when you were looking up the x-ray and holding it up, was that just a prop? I mean, were you simply just regurgitating what you read in the report? Or were you doing a certain
sustained
kind of were you doing any kind of analysis yourself when you were sharing with us what those x-rays showed or didn't show?
The analysis is that there's no fracture or acute injury, and that's what the medical diagnosis is, and that's what the x-rays showed.
Are you giving us your opinion, or are you regurgitating what you read in a report?
That is what the medical diagnosis is, that there's no fractures and no acute injuries. That's what the medical opinion is.
So you're regurgitating what's in the report?
Sustained in that form.
Did you see any MRIs?
I don't believe any MRIs were taken or performed.
In x-rays, does it depict deep soft tissue damage?
Normally, it does not depict soft tissue damage, no.
How about muscle tears?
No, it does not.
How about tendon tears?
Not normally, except you can see laxity in the joints if there is tendon or ligament tears. Normally, you can see laxity in the joints, but it doesn't show the ligament or the tendon itself.
Nerve injuries?
No, sir.
Avulsion fractures?
Yes, sir.
Okay. People sometimes get MRIs to see if there's a fracture that doesn't appear in an x-ray. Yes?
Sometimes. X-rays are the best for looking at bony fractures. MRIs looking at soft tissue injuries.
Speaking of wounds, you've cited a number of references, a number of materials in your reports, haven't you?
I have, yes, sir.
And one of them that you've cited is forensic pathology.
Yes, sir.
This is a legitimate source to you, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you've relied on it for at least part of the basis of your study or opinions.
Well, I relied on it because it speaks and looks at the difference between, for instance, a laceration and an abrasion.
A person could be struck by a motor vehicle and not indicate any bruising to that area, wouldn't you say?
At what speed, what part of the vehicle were they contacted, what part of the body were they contacted? It depends on the amount of force associated with that. There's a number of variables involved.
Okay. Does the absence of a bruise indicate that there was no blunt force trauma to the area?
I'm going to allow it. Can you answer that?
Well, the absence of a bruise, can you repeat that again?
You were talking about bruising.
Yes.
Does the absence of a bruise necessarily indicate there was no blunt force trauma to an area?
No, you have to look at all the evidence, and you have to look at the force. If there's 4,000 pounds of force applied to the body or to the arm, then certainly you would expect a bruise. And if there's no bruise, then you would have to question if that impact or contact actually occurred. You don't just look at that by itself in isolation. You look at all the variables and facts involved with the case to determine if an injury occurred.
Have you ever seen collisions where more than one person was hit or struck by the vehicle?
Multiple pedestrians, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
And have you ever seen in a collision where the vehicle's going the same speed when it hits multiple different people, there can be multiple different injuries?
That is so vague, and you'd have to go back and look at a specific case, look at the injuries, look at the vehicle, look at the people. You can't just say, is it possible this could occur? You have to look at a specific case and demonstrate that that could actually happen.
Well, I'm not asking if it's possible. I'm asking your experience.
I'm going to allow that.
Have you ever been involved in evaluating multiple pedestrian crash where there are multiple pedestrians hit by one vehicle and they sustain different or in some cases no injuries? Has that ever happened in your study?
Sure, because it depends where they're hit, what part of the body they're hit on, what the force is for that hit. The people aren't going to be hit the same multiply by one vehicle. You can certainly have multiple people and different types of injuries.
Have you seen people hit by a vehicle at a particular speed and have certain injuries, and then you've seen other cases where people are hit by a vehicle similar speed but have no injuries? Have you ever seen that?
I'm going to allow it.
So what do you mean by injuries?
Have you ever seen in any of your cases a pedestrian hit at a certain speed and have injuries in another case where you look at where there is a similar type collision with different injuries?
So again, do you mean abrasions, cut, laceration, fracture? Do you mean same cards? It's not something that you look for and compare between cases. You'd have to go back and actually study the cases and look at the details.
Having experience in pedestrian collisions, you can't think of a similarity between cases as far as vehicles and speeds and totally different injuries occurring.
I'm going to allow that. Can you?
You mean hit the same way with the same type of car at the same speed with the same force?
I'm going to allow it. Can you answer it?
I don't believe I've ever seen a case where two people were hit with the same car at the same speed with the same force with different injuries. I don't even know if you can correlate that.
Looking at Exhibit 1, have you done any study about the directionality of glass or broken plastic?
What do you mean by directionality?
About when something shatters, how it shatters. Does it shatter the same every time, or when plastic shatters, does it shatter differently?
It certainly depends on the impact.
Do you have any studies where plastic shatters exactly the same way on different impacts?
I doubt that it shatters exactly the same way.
It has a lot of different variables, doesn't it?
It could.
Depends on a number of different equations, doesn't it?
Well, it depends on the testing you do. If you want to see how it shatters, and if you're claiming that it shattered in a certain way to cause a certain injury, if you don't have any peer-reviewed evidence, if you don't have any research, then you have to do the testing, because you can't just say, well, it's possible it could shatter this way and cause that injury. That's not conclusive. You can't use that to come to an opinion about what happened.
Oh, that wasn't what I was asking you. I was asking you if you have seen in cases that when plastic breaks, it breaks differently.
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, the testing we've done here, the taillights covers fractured differently, and we didn't get any contact. So I have personal experience just with this case alone.
Well, we'll get to the contact. When you looked at all the tests you did, the plastic broke differently in each and every case, every experiment, didn't it?
Sure, it's broken like that. And I've never seen a case where you get these types of abrasions.
Well, I didn't ask you that. Is that funny?
No, it's not funny.
Okay.
So again, I'm going to strike the comment. Next question. Next question, Mr. Brennan. No more comments.
When you did your experiments, the sizes of plastic that broke were different in each experiment, weren't they?
They were, yes.
The number of breaks in each experiment were different, weren't they?
They were, yes.
The angles of the break changed from piece to piece, experiment to experiment, didn't they?
I'm sure they did.
Did you watch the videos and watch the damage and take a look and count how many pieces broke in each experiment?
I didn't specifically count, no. We looked at contact to the sleeve and to the dummy itself.
You never counted the broken pieces in each experiment?
I did not. There was no need to.
Not a matter of if there's a need, did you?
I did not, no, sir.
Okay. You had talked quite a bit about Dr. Welcher's test with the paint, so I want to ask you some questions about that. Were you ever under the impression that Mr. Welcher, you can take that down, please. Were you ever under the impression that Dr. Welcher was trying to reenact the actual collision when he did that blue test?
Objection, Your Honor. I'm going to allow it.
Well, that was the only test he performed, and he referenced that test for his opinion that the position and orientation of the lacerations are consistent with the taillight cover. So if that test was not intended to signify or demonstrate the position of the arm, he has no evidence to say the position and orientation of the arm in the lacerations, which are abrasions, are consistent with the taillight cover. That's the only test he did. So if it doesn't represent that, it's really meaningless in his analysis and conclusions.
Now that you've shared your opinions, can I get back to my question?
Sustained. So, Mr. Jackson, Mr. Brent, I'm going to see counsel at sidebar. So it will be the lunch and recess, and we'll take an hour.
All right, so court, please.
You are unmuted.
But it's now open. You may be seated.
All right, while the jury is on their way in, I need to see counsel at sidebar.
Please rise for the jury.
Mr. Brennan, jurors, hopefully it'll be comfortable enough in here this afternoon. The court officers has done a great job keeping the AC going while we were out of the courtroom. So.
Dr. Rentschler, you wrote a report back in February 2024?
Yeah, that's correct, yes, sir.
And in that report, you provided a number of opinions, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Do you remember if you opined or had the opinion that the injuries on Mr. O'Keefe's arm would not result from impact with a non-damaged tail lamp cover?
I believe that's correct, yes.
And the amount of force required to fracture the tail lamp cover would result in extensive soft tissue and likely bony injury to Mr. O'Keefe's right arm.
Correct.
And so your opinion back in 2004 was that if a person's arm were to cause the damage to that taillight on that Lexus, you would expect to see extensive soft tissue and likely bony injury?
Yes, soft tissue referring to ligaments and tendons of the elbow and shoulder, correct, and the wrist.
And so you're saying not superficial abrasions, but in the arm?
Yes, when you look at, and from you can see from the testing we did for this case, for this round, that the arm extends and you have contact with the arm, you would expect at those speeds damage to the tendons and the ligaments, the elbow, the shoulder, likely the wrist.
And the x-rays that we looked at or that we saw and you offered the words of the medical expert, there is no MRI studying any ligament damage, is there?
There are no MRIs that I'm aware of, no, sir.
And x-rays wouldn't fairly depict some of those internal injuries that you're referring to, would they?
As I described before, it can show laxity of the joint, but it normally doesn't show the actual soft tissue damage itself, no, sir.
And a crash test dummy is different than a person, isn't it?
Certainly it is, yes.
No muscle?
That's correct.
No ligaments?
That's correct.
The crash test dummy does not react or respond like a human being?
Well, it does to a certain extent, yes.
There are differences?
Certainly there are, yes.
And so when you're looking at a crash test dummy, you can agree that there are significant differences between what you might see on the dummy's arm and what would maybe happen to a human being's arm on the inside.
There can be. That's why you have to look at the acceleration and the force, and that's primarily what the ATD is utilized for.
But focusing on the actual observation of the arm, you would agree, doctor, that looking at a crash test dummy arm is not comparable to actually looking into a human being's arm with an MRI and seeing if there's any damage on the inside?
No, of course that they're not the same, no, sir.
You were speaking about references earlier. You did have a chance to see Dr. Welcher's report, didn't you?
I did, yes.
And in his report, there were a number of references, weren't there?
There were different references, but I think maybe 26 within his report.
In addition to his references, you were sent a number of gigabytes of information, weren't you?
I was, yes.
And in those gigabytes, there was different references to different materials, wasn't there?
Well, first of all, there were only 26 references in his report that he cited to for his opinions. There was material contained within the batch of documents that they sent over. There was a bibliography or CV of different papers that he had submitted, I think 20 pages of papers that weren't referenced in the original report. And the most recent paper in that AutoPed packet was from 2004. Most of them were from the 60s and 70s, but there was an additional packet of information.
When you read his report and saw his references, did you look up the references?
I did, yes, sir.
Okay. And when you were saying earlier that there was only one reference, you were referring to the pink test, correct?
Well, I was referring to there's only one reference specifically with respect to automobile pedestrian impacts.
When you looked at his references, sir, did you have an opportunity to read any of the articles?
I did, yes, sir.
And many of them are peer-reviewed?
Yes, sir.
In addition, when you looked at the 20 pages of materials he sent over that were not in his report, how many references did you read out of those 20 pages of references that he offered?
Well, I didn't read any because they weren't referred to in his report for his actual opinions in this case.
Do you know whether or not he considered those references or whether he read those references?
I'm going to allow that.
He didn't cite to any of those references in either the PowerPoint presentation or in his report. That's the knowledge I have of whether he reviewed those.
So you don't know what he considered or thought, do you?
I know what he cited to and he referenced to in his report and PowerPoint. But that's the extent.
The
yes.
question is, you don't know what he was referring or reading or relying on other than what was in his report cited, correct?
Well, right. If he referred to the other articles, yes, yeah, certainly other articles in the 60s, 70s, and 80s he may have, but they don't really pertain to what happened in this case.
How many references were in your May 7th report?
Well, I think there were... Let's 26, I think.
Those 26 references, Are they offered in your report to suggest some type of support for the proposition that you're promoting in the report?
Well, they support the opinions or the methodology or both with respect to what I've offered in this
matter. The reason why you put a cite in is suggesting that it supports whatever proposition you're footnoting on that. Correct?
To some extent, or the methodology or some information pertinent to that opinion, yes, sir.
Regarding crash test dummies and prediction in soft tissue injury, you provided three sites, didn't you?
And soft tissue injuries?
Yes.
Can you show me where that it says that, sir?
Footnote 11 of your report, Mr. O'Keefe's right arm kinematics during impact with the Lexus are inconsistent with producing the documented cuts damage to his right sleeve as well as the abrasions to his right arm. Did you write that?
Yes, and which one was that again? I just want to make sure. What was
you,
the number?
You cited footnotes 24, 25, and 26.
Yes.
And when you cited 24, 25, 26, did any of those three sites, in fact, those are the only sites that you cited for that proposition, correct?
Yes, sir.
So your entire basis of sites is limited to those three articles or three papers, yes?
For reference, it's not, the testing obviously proves differently, but yes, for that one comment there, those were the three that were provided, yes.
Starting with number 24. When you looked at 24, did it ever suggest this paper? Did it ever suggest that it was appropriate to use a crash test dummy in the material of a crash test dummy to make an analysis or determine whether or not there would be documented damage to someone's skin?
No, it didn't, and that's not what I did in this matter.
In this article you cite supporting the claim that you made, there is nothing in here that would suggest that a crash test dummy is appropriate to use in making that determination, is there?
There is not, no sir.
In fact, in this article, it gives you details on what actually should be used to make that analysis, doesn't it?
No sir, it tells you certain ways to look at sharpness and how lacerations are caused.
This is titled Skin Tissue Cutability and its Relation to Lacerations Severity Indices. You know that, you cited that.
That's correct, and it looks at specifically, I think, laminated glass and its ability to cut the skin.
Number 24 in your site, correct?
Yes.
And it tells you three types of skin were examined and used for this type of study. Postmortem human skin from two different body sites. Cameos leather and Napa goat skin. Is that correct?
Right, to look specifically at laminated glass and it's the cutability of that type of glass.
And the reason why the study is giving those suggestions is because a crash test dummy's arm and fabric, the way it's made, is different than how real skin would respond. Yes?
Well, it is different, sure.
Yeah.
And I didn't do that type of comparison.
You did not do any comparisons with any of the suggestions in the site that you cited in support for your proposition, did you?
Oh, I did not evaluate that, no. Not in that manner, no, sir.
And then you cited number 24 or 25. You cited a book, Forensic Pathology, correct?
Correct.
And in this Forensic Pathology book, in the entire book, it never suggests that crash test dummies are appropriate to use when making this type of analysis, does it?
Correct, and that's why I would not do that type of analysis with respect to lacerations. That's not what my analysis involves, sir.
My question was, nowhere in that book does it say that crash test dummies are appropriate for analyzing skin lacerations on a collision, does it?
Sure, I mean, for that sake, it doesn't say it's inappropriate either.
And then you also cited an article, your third article, Understanding the Acute Skin Injury Mechanisms Caused by Player Surface Contact During Soccer. Did you cite that?
I did, yes.
And again, there's nothing in there that talks about the appropriate use of a crash test dummy when you are trying to support the proposition that someone's arm is consistent or inconsistent with producing cuts and damage in a collision.
That's correct.
Are you aware of literature relative specifically to the use of the Hybrid 3 crash test dummy, which was used in this case?
There's a lot of literature with respect to the Hybrid dummy, yes.
Have you ever heard of the person by the name of Stanley Bacatus?
I don't recall that I have.
Okay. How about Harold Mertz? Isn't he a leader in the field with crash test dummies?
He is, yes.
Right. Would you agree that we also do not believe the current instrumented arm configuration is suitable either for prediction of soft tissue injuries? Would you agree with that?
Well, for laceration, sure, it shouldn't be used for that. It shouldn't be used in that manner. That's why I don't use it in that manner.
Do you have any source that says it's suitable for determining superficial abrasions?
I do not, no, sir.
You have no other sites whatsoever supporting that proposition, which led inevitably to one of the opinions you gave to this jury, true?
No, not true. That's a misrepresentation of what I performed, the testing that I performed, and the results that I analyzed in this case.
Now, you've talked a lot about Dr. Welch's pain test. You don't have any information that Dr. Welcher ever claimed that his test was intended to represent exactly how Mr. O'Keefe's arm was when he was hit, do you?
Well, the evidence I have for that is that in his report, he says that the orientation and position of the lacerations are consistent with the orientation position of the taillight cover. And then right under that, he has reference to that test that he performed. So again, if he didn't intend to do that, then there's no evidence that he can provide with respect to the arm impact at all. That's the only test that was performed to look at the arm and the taillight cover. If it doesn't represent the actual position, then apparently he has no idea how the arm was positioned or how it was impacted.
Let's get back to my question.
Yes.
Is there anything where Dr. Welcher has informed you or written that he is intending to represent the actual arm angle of John O'Keefe when he was hit by Alexis?
Again, I just described what he has in his actual report. So he didn't write specifically that that's what it's intended to do. It seems he's inferred that. And again, that's the only test that he's performed or referred to in this case.
You inferred that.
Inferred that that's how he believes that the arm was positioned.
I think we understand your perspective is that the only test he performed, but what I really want to get at is your conclusion, your assumption that Dr. Welcher was suggesting that there was a specific arm angle that occurred in this case that he was identifying. You don't see that anywhere in his report.
Well, it would be pretty odd if the one test he ran didn't actually represent what he thought happened. I don't understand what the value of that would actually be.
Did Dr. Welch ever represent that he was trying to describe the actual body position of John O'Keefe when he was hit?
Actually, he doesn't state that. He states very little in his report or in his PowerPoint. He demonstrates through the video of his arm like that and contacting it, and then he holds his arm up to a picture of Mr. O'Keefe's right arm to compare and apparently demonstrate that it's in the same area. But again, he doesn't actually state that opinion. He doesn't state any opinions that the contact actually occurred, except in one point, and has no evidence or foundation for that.
Would the answer to my question be no?
You would have to ask Dr. Welcher, I suppose, but if it's not, again, then I'm not sure what that test actually accomplished
or
represented.
You've made assumptions and then have given opinions to this jury based on your assumptions, haven't you?
I've evaluated the evidence in the one test he ran. If that's incorrect, well, then I would have to correct my opinion and my assumption and say that not only is the test not actually show what occurred, but he hasn't performed anything to actually link the arm contact to the taillight cover. If it doesn't represent that, you're right, I changed my opinion that there's no evidence, no analysis, no conclusion whatsoever.
I'm going to try to make my question a little clearer. Is there anything in the report where Dr. Welcher has stated that the arm angle in the demonstration was in any way attempt to replicate exactly how John O'Keefe's arm was when he was struck by Alexis?
I don't believe anything's written in the report with respect to that, no.
Is there anything in the report, Dr. Wexler, anything
that states Dr. Welcher was stating or claiming that he knew the body position of John O'Keefe when he was struck?
Objection.
I'm going to allow that.
So no, I guess there is no opinion or conclusion that he knows how Mr. O'Keefe was actually positioned at the time of this alleged incident. You're correct.
Do you know whether Dr. Welcher has been clear that he does not know? Let me say this a different way. You would agree Dr. Welcher has never stated in his report that he can identify the speed at which Mr. O'Keefe was struck in a collision.
He does not state what he thinks the speed is. That's correct.
He never states how far, if at all, Mr. O'Keefe was thrown after being in a collision.
That's right. He does not.
When you don't know the speed, you don't know the body position, and you don't know the angle of the body at the time of collision, you cannot replicate a collision with crash test dummies to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty.
Well, you're right. You can't prove that that actually occurred. That's the basis. Yeah.
So,
if you don't have the information, you can't replicate what happened. You can't determine, you can't state to any conclusion of accuracy what actually occurred if you don't have the evidence.
So, if you were to do a crash reenactment, but couldn't state to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty this replicated the actual collision, that wouldn't be scientifically reliable to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, would it?
Well, if you perform a test and you state this is what I tested and this is the angle, then you can certainly say these are my conclusions. But if you don't know the throw distance, if you don't know the position, then you're correct. You can't actually come to a conclusion that it didn't occur. If you don't know how something occurred, how can you conclude that it actually occurred? It scientifically makes no sense.
So, if an expert does a crash test and they can't determined to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty that it replicates the actual collision, you would agree that would not be a reliable test to present to a jury, don't you?
I'm going to very briefly.
In reading the reports and evaluating the PowerPoint, would you agree there is no statement by Dr. Welcher ever in anything that you reviewed that he is claiming or stating that his pain test was supposed to be a reenactment identifying the details of how Mr. O'Keefe was standing, moving, or holding his arm at the time of a collision?
He did not state that. That's correct.
So when you've made your criticisms that you've done testing regarding Dr. Welcher, you don't have any evidence, any statement by him that he was trying to reenact the actual collision?
When I did that, there is one test with the arm like this. That's the only evidence that was presented in his opinion or in his case. I evaluated that. I have not seen any other explanation of what happened or how it occurred. Specifically, Dr. Welcher said in his report on page 9, he said, I have conducted an accident reconstruction and biomechanical engineering analysis of this matter. If he did not recreate how he was positioned, if he did not determine the speed of impact, if he did not determine how Mr. O'Keefe's body moved, if he did not determine where he ended up, then he did not conduct either an accident reconstruction analysis or a biomechanical causation analysis. He did nothing of the sort.
Other than your opinion, let's get back to my question if I could.
I believe I answered at the beginning of that, sir.
I'm going to ask you again. My detailed question is, there is nothing in Dr. Welch's report or any of his presentation that states he is trying to represent the exact posture, movement, and stance of Mr. O'Keefe when there was a collision. It's not anywhere in there where he stated that, is it?
It's not stated. I'd be curious to find out if that wasn't the intent of the test, I'd be curious to see what the actual intent was.
Is the answer no, it's not in there?
I think I just said that at the beginning of my answer, sir.
I'm going to ask you again, is the answer no?
The answer is no.
When you do crash tests, you have a controlled environment in some respects, don't you?
You do, yes, sir.
You get to control some or sometimes many of the variables, don't you?
You can, yes.
Real life sometimes is described in your world as chaos, right?
I suppose it could be under certain circumstances.
Testing is limited to the variables that you produce, but real life sometimes has variables you can't predict. Isn't that fair to say?
It's possible, yes.
Is it more than possible, doctor?
I don't know, is it?
What I'm asking you.
It depends on the situation and the certain variables. It depends on the case. It could be possible, yes.
Have you seen cases where variables are impossible to predict?
Where the what?
Variables. Have you had cases? You've had many cases, you said. Have you had cases where variables are impossible to predict?
It depends. I mean, it depends on what you're looking at. And if you want to conclude that something happened and this is how it occurred, you have to look at those variables. If you can't control for those variables, then it's possible you can't prove that it actually happened. So yes, if you're doing a certain test to prove something, you have to look at how those variables may affect it. But there's basic information you have to know to perform that type of an analysis.
So my question again is, are there scenarios where variables are impossible to predict?
There could be, yes.
Have you had cases yourself where there are variables that were impossible to predict?
I suppose I probably have. I mean, it depends. If you don't know what happened, sure, then you don't know those variables necessarily.
How many cases have you done on pedestrian accidents?
I've done hundreds of cases.
So you have a good background and basis to know whether or not there are variables that sometimes you can't predict, don't you?
Sure. As I said, it depends on the case.
When you did the crash tests in this case, did you actually do them?
I did not, no.
Were you even there when they happened?
I was not, no, sir.
So you're relying in part on Dr. Wolf's work?
I am, yes.
If Dr. Wolf made mistakes, would that affect your conclusions?
It depends what mistakes they are.
When you had, or when Dr. Wolf had the crash test dummy in test E and F on a forklift, you remember those?
I do, yes.
When it's on the forklift, it does not allow the crash test dummy after being struck to move, to be thrown, does it?
Actually, if it's a force acting on it, it will move. It will, like a pendulum. So if there's a force acting on it, you'll see which direction it moves. If there's a forward force, it will move. It'll swing forward or sideways or backwards. It can move.
Well, my question isn't direction. It's, can it show the throw? Can it throw or move the crash test dummy in its natural course after the collision to a resting spot?
No. In those tests, though, there wouldn't be any throw.
If a crash test dummy is restrained by a forklift, if a crash test dummy is restrained by a forklift, it does not allow the crash test dummy to be thrown, does it?
Assuming there is throw, that's correct. It doesn't.
It doesn't allow an observation of the crash test dummy to turn or fall, does it?
No, it does not. Well, no, actually it turns, sure. I mean, it can spin.
How about fall?
No, and a crash test dummy would just fall down anyway.
Have you seen crash test dummies where it is held in place electromagnetically, and when the collision happens, then the dummy can move? Have you seen that?
I have, yes.
Have you seen crash tests with crash test dummy where there is a light? I'm sorry. Have you seen crash tests with crash test dummies where there is a light string and somebody cuts the string moments before the impact or a second before the impact?
I have, yes.
That wasn't done in this case, was it?
What? It wasn't. It wasn't necessary.
Was that done in this case?
It wasn't. I'll speak slower and a little clearer.
Maybe if you answer my question.
I just did answer it. I said it wasn't.
When the crash test dummy is held by a forklift and the car hits it, it doesn't replicate the drag that the car will have on the crash test dummy as it would a real person, does it?
You can see if there's any drag because it's on like a pendulum. So if there's any drag pushing it forward, it's going to sway that way. It's going to move the dummy. It's not going to move at the distance that it actually would. If there was any distance, it would move it. But you can actually see the motion, and you can see in the testing, the 24 mile an hour testing, there was no motion, which is not unexpected for that type of a test.
There is a difference between a crash on center of mass and a fender vault, isn't there?
There is, yes.
A fender vault is a different type of collision than a center of mass collision. Isn't that true?
That's correct.
It is impossible to replicate all of the different scenarios with a crash test dummy on a fender vault collision, isn't it?
I mean, it depends on what you're trying to replicate, and it depends looking at the injuries or how someone was positioned. So if you know how they were positioned, you can try and replicate that, yes.
Could I have 59 of Dr. Renshaw's PowerPoint, please? In your PowerPoint, you cited an article, Vehicle Pedestrian Collisions, Validated Models for Pedestrian Impact and Projection, correct?
Yes.
And you put snippets up on the board?
Yes.
Okay. And these snippets talk about an engagement with the pedestrian in the vehicle?
Correct.
Okay. Is there a reason why you took out a piece of that article that falls between those two paragraphs?
I don't think so, no. Those are the most relevant parts.
Did you cut out the part that says some frontal collisions are with the corner of the vehicle where the pedestrian is deflected to one side without secondary impact of the upper body with the vehicle front? Alternatively, the transverse velocity of the pedestrian at impact may be sufficient to prevent head contact as the body rotates sideways off the bonnet. And these situations are known as fender vault. The models presented here do not apply to fender vault. Did you leave that part out purposely?
Oh, yeah, I did, sir, because this isn't a frontal impact with a sedan over the fender of the hood of a sedan. This is with the back of an SUV, so it's completely different.
You've cited many, many sources where it talks about front-end collisions because that is the majority of pedestrian collisions, the front end, isn't it?
The majority, yes. It is, yes, sir.
And so there is a difference between fender vault and a center of mass collision, isn't there?
There is, that's correct. And that's why you see a center of mass, you look at the testing we did, that's a center of mass impact. On a frontal impact, usually, if you're hit by the front of a car, it doesn't usually get your center of mass, you're too tall. That's why you do a fender vault, or you flip onto the hood, or you flip over the top of the car. So yeah, it's completely different. It doesn't pertain to allegedly what occurred in this case.
So let me get back to my question. When the tests were done, E and F, F was a center of mass collision at 29 miles per hour, wasn't it?
That's correct, yes.
Right. E, are you considering E a center of mass collision?
Which was E, the
24 miles per hour?
No, it didn't hit the center of mass of the dummy, it just hit the arm.
Exactly, so there is a difference. In this case, you don't know the position of Mr. O'Keefe's arm at impact, do you?
Nobody knows. I don't think his arm was even impacted by the car, so no. I don't know the position of the arm at impact because it wasn't hit by the car.
You don't know the angle of his body at impact, do you?
The alleged angle?
So ask the question again.
Okay. You have no information about the angle of Mr. O'Keefe's body at the time the defendant's Lexus was traveling backwards on January 29, 2022, do you?
We have no information that he was even hit by the Lexus. So there wouldn't be any information on the angle if his body wasn't hit.
When you talked about force equations with this jury, you cited a number of pieces of literature, didn't you?
I did, yes.
And when you cited the literature, you cited all literature regarding concentrated forces, didn't you?
No, that's not true.
There's a difference between concentrated and distributed force, isn't there?
Yeah, I talked about that on my direct, yes,
when
sir.
When you showed your slides, for example, the hand.
Yes.
Could we see slide 8, please? Okay. Let's try slide 56. You would agree with me, Doctor, there's a difference between a concentrated and a distributed load, wouldn't you?
I would, yes.
When you gave your opinions in this case, it was based on concentrated load, wasn't it?
No, sir.
When you gave your force equations, was that distributed load or concentrated load?
Well, that was the load at the center of mass. And so you can evaluate that on a distributed load. You look at acceleration and you look at bending moment. So you can do both.
When you gave your charts and numbers, was that based on concentrated or distributed load?
No, that was based on the distributed load with respect to the center of mass of that arm and where the accelerometer was.
But this was not a center of mass impact.
We're assuming a center of mass is the most dispersed impact. So if we want concentrated, then we look at a focal point, and you can do that with the hand. But the center of mass acceleration and distributed across the entire arm, that's where it's the least amount of pressure. If we're talking about force over area. And that's what I evaluated in this case.
When you gave your demonstration about the hand with the different hexagons on it, do you remember that?
I do, yes, sir.
Okay. There's a difference between taking a small object and putting pressure on the body as opposed to a larger, wider object, isn't there?
Well, it depends on what it's contacting. And certainly not a difference when you look at the size of that impactor and the size of the knuckles and the metacarpal bones.
So for example, if somebody took a book and hit somebody off the forehead, it may or may not leave a mark. But if they used the same force and they took a high heel, the heel of a high heel and hit somebody, there would likely be more damage with the high heel than there would with the book. Isn't that fair to say?
Well, soft tissue, but if the force is the same, you would expect the fracture to occur. You have to look at the distribution, you have to look at the strength of the bone, and you have to look at the overall force that's being applied.
Now, you said in your differential diagnosis, you considered all evidence. Did you say that on direct examination?
I don't believe I did. I believe I considered evidence for a biomechanical and accident reconstruction analysis in this case.
So you didn't consider phone data?
Has nothing to do with biomechanics or accident reconstruction.
Did you consider text stream data?
I'll
strike it. Did you consider Apple Healthcare data?
No, sir.
Objection. I'm going to allow it.
Did you consider phone temperature, battery temperature data?
Objection. I'm going to allow it.
Has nothing to do with biomechanics, sir.
I'll ask again. Did you consider it?
I did not, no.
You said it would be improper to ignore evidence. Are those your words?
For a biomechanical analysis, yes, sir.
Okay. Have you been to the scene of an accident before or a collision?
I have, yes.
Do you know what a debris field is?
Yes, sir.
And you've seen in your videos, E and F, there's debris fields after the collision and the taillight breaks, isn't there?
So first of all, there's debris in the yard. What that's from, is there a collision? Was there a collision? Where did that come from? Where it was positioned? That's all conjecture and supposition. Those aren't actual facts, sir.
Can you hear my question about debris field? I'm asking.
Yeah, and I think it's in a...
Excuse me, sir. In a collision, have you seen debris fields?
I have, yes.
Have you seen debris fields where a taillight is shattered?
I have, yes.
In fact, in your video, yes or no, after the collisions, in video E and F, there are debris fields, aren't there?
There are at a certain point, yes, sir, absolutely.
And so when you're looking at your studies, do you consider debris fields?
It depends on the evidence. It depends on how it was collected. It depends if it is accurate or reliable. But from a biomechanical standpoint, no. You don't need to look at the debris field or alleged debris field of a taillight cover. That has nothing to do with the injuries or the position or the movement of an individual.
Can I have Exhibit 73, please? Do you see that, sir?
I do.
Do you know what that is?
Looks like possibly part of the taillight cover.
Right. Is that an alleged part of taillight cover, or do you think that's part of a taillight cover, sir?
I don't know specifically. It might be part of the actual taillight cover.
Well, when you studied this case and you looked at all the evidence and all these different things, did you look at these photos and see that alleged piece of taillight shard recovered from the front yard area of 34 Fairview Road? Did you consider that?
Well, I don't. Was that part of the one that was recovered by a leaf blower or not?
When you were doing your ample study, sir.
Yes.
What I'm asking you is, when you were looking at all the available evidence, did you look at this photo of this alleged taillight shard on the front lawn of 34 Fairview Road? Were you aware of it?
No. Oh, I was aware that there was debris in the yard, but again, that has nothing to do with the biomechanical analysis. Mm-hmm. If you can't prove that the impact happened, then everything after that doesn't actually matter, does it? Because all of that would be from something else. So unless you prove the core issue at this case, the contact, the post-impact movement, the head injury, without proving that, everything else is ancillary to what you're attempting to conclude.
Do you have any evidence in your biomechanical studies how this alleged piece of taillight shard ended up on the front lawn of 34 Fairview?
I don't. No, sir. I didn't evaluate or investigate that.
Could I have Exhibit 76A, please? Did you see this photograph, sir?
I do, yes.
Is that part of a red taillight shard or an alleged piece of a taillight shard?
It looks like it, yes.
Did you consider this in your biomechanical studies, that this taillight shard was found in front of 34 Fairview Road?
Was found. Can you give me a precise distance from where the body was found and where that was found with respect to Mr. O'Keefe, with respect to a reference point?
Did you consider this, sir?
There is none, so no, I did not consider that.
Do you know how this taillight shard got there?
How it got there?
Yes.
That wasn't part of my analysis. There are certainly different possibilities of how that actually occurred.
Exhibit 990. Do you know what that is, sir?
It looks like part of the light assembly.
Mr. O'Keefe's hat?
Oh,
that's
his hat.
Did you look at this photograph?
I see now, yes.
Did you know he was wearing a hat that night?
I did, yes.
Okay. And did you consider how that hat ended up on the ground in front of 34 Fairview?
No, sir, that was not part of my biomechanical analysis. There's a number of ways a hat can end up in a yard.
Right. Is one of those ways being in a collision with a Lexus?
I suppose that's a possibility, or someone could put it there. I mean, there's a number of different possibilities as to when or how a hat may appear in a yard.
Who do you think put it there?
Well, I have no idea. I haven't seen any evidence of how it got there, and frankly, it's immaterial to a biomechanical analysis.
Do you have a theory you want to share with us about planting evidence? Is that where we're getting at, sir?
Sustained.
By the way, the x-rays you looked at earlier, when's the first time you saw those?
I saw those when we got when I was on the case initially for the first trial.
No mention in your report about reviewing those.
It says I reviewed medical records and reports. And that's how I actually word in every report I have. I just put generally that it refers to medical records and reports, which includes x-rays, MRIs.
Exhibit 74, please. Have you seen this photograph?
I have, yes.
Okay. in your studies or your testing, did you determine how Mr. O'Keefe's shoe ended up near the curb?
No, sir.
Exhibit 201A, please. Have you seen this photograph before?
I don't know that I have.
Have you ever seen any container that had taillight shards that matched the defendant's Lexus that were removed from his sweatshirt and his shirt? Have you ever seen any container holding those?
I haven't. Well, I believe there was evidence collected like that, but yes.
Okay, could we have 201E, please? Have you seen this photo?
I believe I have seen that, yes.
Do you understand those are taillight shards matching the defendant's Lexus, the broken taillight?
Yes.
That were recovered from Mr. O'Keefe's sweater or shirt?
Objection.
I'm going to allow that. Did you consider that?
No.
I'll try. I'd rather try to reformat it than come sidebar. Did you know that taillight shards were collected after Mr. O'Keefe's sweatshirt and t-shirt was scraped?
Objection.
I'm going to allow that.
Your Honor, I need to see the
jurors, this will be brief.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Lowe's knows you want the best for dad. This Father's Day, help him take on any project with big deals on DeWalt. Right now, get a free XR 8 amp hour battery when you buy select DeWalt tools. That's not all. Get up to two free select tools when you buy a select DeWalt 20 volt max battery kit. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a work load is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
Hey, Mama, you don't have time to be messing around endlessly scrolling to find a caregiver for your child. Let me clue you in to my trick to save time and my sanity when finding a sitter. SitterCity.com. SitterCity knows what they're doing. They've been helping busy parents find the perfect sitter for over 20 years. While other sites overwhelm you by throwing hundreds of random profiles your way, SitterCity matches you with caregivers who actually fit your needs. No endless scrolling, no guesswork. I love that all caregivers undergo ID verification. They have background checks, specialized qualifications, and real parent reviews to know if they showed up on time or really know how to handle my sassy toddler. And if I need help, I can talk to a real live human, not a robot, with SitterCity's delightful team. You know, my employer pays for me to get SitterCity completely free as part of my benefits. Yours could too. SitterCity is my go-to for a smarter, simpler way to find reliable, trustworthy care. Don't wait. Go to SitterCity.com/XX and get the help you need.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.